guys, the story where the hour of truth is the first Saturday of each month at Iowa West. And you know what that means, Hannes?
What does it mean?
It's this Saturday at Iowa West in Hollywood. The show starts at 8 o'clock, and ask me how much it costs.
How much does it cost?
It's free.
What? This
it's
is madness.
Free. That's right, folks. Come on down to Iowa West on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. We're up in the loft, but I will be there at 7:30 in the bar.
Right, and you can speak to her.
Well, you have to buy me a PBR.
Okay.
They're on draft.
Yes, they have
$3.
Yeah, they have Pepsi Urban on draft. It's just like my childhood.
It's all coming back. All right, you guys, we'll see you this Saturday night, April 5th, at Iowa West, 8 o'clock.
Hey, folks, this is Hannes Finney from the Storyworthy Podcast, and we want to thank you for your support. We want to thank you for listening. And you know what? The only way for us to grow is for you to tell your friends, tell your family, tell people you don't even like. We need you to get the word out there about Storyworthy. And we thank you.
We thank you.
We thank you.
This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy. You know, GoDaddy has everything you need to put your business out there and kick ass online. So get started by registering a domain name and creating your website with GoDaddy's easy-to-use website builder. Already have a site? Well, keep it running fast with GoDaddy's web hosting. All right, you guys, let's do this thing. Visit GoDaddy.com, enter the promo code STORY32, and save 32% on new purchases. Some limitations apply. See website for details. And remember, enter the promo code STORY32 and you are supporting Storyworthy. Thank you.
This is John Thomas Griffith and you're listening to Storyworthy Podcast with Hannes and Christine Blackburn. Serve them up.
Hey! Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney. We're coming to you from Cologne, Germany, where they also celebrate Mardi Gras called Carnival Fastnacht or Fastlich.
Yeah, depending on the region. That's right.
Exactly.
They do celebrate. It's called it's the Eve of the Fast. Is that right? In Germany?
Eve of the Fast, which generally, of course, does not include beer.
Oh, I see.
They just must have. It's pretty funny because I've been to Germany when that's happening. And I mean, even like right now as we speak. And it's like to see, it's like they cover it on TV and everything. And to see a bunch of Germans dressed up in fantastic costumes with stoic faces.
Right.
It's like they don't get it. It's like, okay, it's Carnival. Are we supposed to be having fun now? Is that what's happening?
So, yeah, because tonight's topic, of course, is Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras.
Brought to us by the musician, John Thomas Griffith.
Who?
John Thomas Griffith.
I have no idea who that is.
And, you know, he spent a lot of time in New Orleans, and I know he has a story or two, because I've heard some of his stories about New Orleans. So I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
Does he try and distract you when you're playing tennis by telling you debauched stories from New Orleans?
No, but what does distract me is the beads, you know, the throwing of the beads.
Oh, well, yeah.
On the court. And that's, but let me ask you.
Sure, he pulls his shirt up. He's like, woo, throw me beads.
No, it's true. Germany does celebrate Mardi Gras, as does a lot of other countries.
Yeah, Dakar, Senegal.
But wait, I want to ask you more about Germany.
Ahead.
Stop.
Yes, I'm sorry.
How is it different than Oktoberfest? In other words, in Oktoberfest, the folks aren't dressed up as wildly, right?
I believe that is specifically, that's the thing, is Oktoberfest is, let's say, it's the Mardi Gras of being German. You're wearing, you know, you've probably colored your hair. If you're a middle-aged woman, you've colored your hair a bright red that is not seen in nature, mm-hmm. which is all middle-aged women in Germany. You drink a tremendous amount of beer and eat a tremendous amount of bratwurst and stuff. But Carnival or Festnacht is an attempt to, it's the whole dressing up thing. It's like you're not being yourself. You're trying to be an outside
right.
giant person, which, again, people in, like, France and New Orleans, they're good at that. And the Germans, not so good at stepping outside themselves.
Right. No, it isn't. Well, Mardi Gras, of course, also known as Fat Tuesday.
Yes.
So, but it refers to all of the events leading up, you know, to the whole carnival celebration.
Right, and then...
But the thing is, a lot of it is Christian-based, isn't it? Because it's beginning on or after the Epiphany of King's Day, and then culminating on the day before Ash Wednesday. That's how it goes down. It's all about leading up to Lent.
It's kind of this whole thing, this very, very I want to say Catholic, but I guess it's just a Christian thing of like, wait, I'm going to have to repent on Ash Wednesday.
Right.
I better get some sinning in.
Right.
So I better do some debauched shit.
Right.
And otherwise, I got nothing to tell the priest.
Exactly. And the last night is always eating rich, fatty foods before the fasting.
Foods.
Before the ritual of the fasting of Lent, right?
Yeah, which is probably, by the way, the worst possible thing you could do. Because I know that, like, if I have to fast for to get your blood drawn, which is silly because it's like 12 hours and it's like if you stuff yourself full of food right before the deadline, then your blood sugar spikes and you're just starving to death. So if you eat all this food on before Ash Wednesday, you're going to be starving that day. You just sort of keep it, just keep diminishing your food. But that's not what it's about. Mardi Gras is not about it.
Carnival. Now, that word, Hannes, comes from two words, carne and vol, which means goodbye.
Which means meat and value.
No, it means goodbye to the meat.
Goodbye to the meat.
Goodbye to the meat. I gave that up in my last marriage.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say, that was my nickname in college. Goodbye to the meat.
Interesting. But Carnival, of course, is the most famous Brazilian holiday. And this is when in Brazil they get like 70% of their tourists are there during Carnival.
Yeah, because what happens at Carnival stays at Carnival, except for the diseases.
I don't know. They have these massive parades that take place in these large samba dromes. Have you heard of that word before?
I haven't heard of that word. I've seen some of this footage, and there's a lot of naked people.
2 million people go to the city of Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, my God.
2 million people in the city. That's a lot, right?
That's yeah. And for, I'm not thinking that their infrastructure is really strong enough for that kind of thing. I'm thinking it's... Yeah, I'm sure it's a very nice place, but there's a little bit of a third world vibe to Rio de Janeiro.
Let me ask you this. Have you heard of a king's... Is it called a king's cake or king cake?
No, that doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, this is a Mardi Gras thing. More than 500,000 king cakes are sold each year in New Orleans between January 6th and Fat Tuesday. And then they also ship a lot out of state. It's a sugar-coated pastry, and inside the pastry is a tiny plastic baby doll. This is where it all goes downhill.
This is sounding more familiar.
Person who finds it is declared the king, and you must buy the next cake or give the next party. If you're the king, somebody should be throwing the party for you.
Yeah, and if I've been watching Game of Thrones, if you're the king and there's a baby in your cake, you would just kill it, and then you would kill the parents, and you would have everybody. You go, I'm the king, and somebody would say, a man who says he has to say I'm the king is no king. Thank you.
Hannes,
John Thomas Griffith is staring at me. Nobody cares.
You guys, Hannes just put his hands up on his, like, underneath his arm.
I look like Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger, but like a real feminine thing.
I was trying to look like King Joffrey on that Game of Thrones. He's a real scumbag.
Yeah.
He's a real,
he's
bad. Oh, it's a fantastic show. Great, well written. It does have a major part for a fantastic actor, Peter Dinklage, who is a little person.
Yeah, I know. That's tough for you. I'm getting better at that whole thing.
Good, good. Well, this would be a good intro because he's so awesome in the show.
Listen, Mardi Gras is one of those things, Hannes, that I always thought was on my list, like my to-do list. I thought I wanted to go to New Year's Eve in Times Square.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to a Super Bowl. I wanted to go to, an Oscars ceremony, and I wanted to go to Mardi Gras.
Huh. I would put Mardi Gras above like the Super Bowl.
Well, it's interesting. Now, I don't really care for the crowds as much as I used to. I think I'm getting older.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I can imagine going to Mardi Gras and staying at the Marriott.
Yeah, if I was in a nice hotel. And I had like a patio that overlooked the debauchery going on down below. Maybe that.
It's funny. My one New Orleans story involves something like that because when my ex and I, these many, many years ago, were going to move to California, we said, well, we need a vacation on the way. We'll go to New Orleans. Now, if you look at the geography of driving from Milwaukee to New Orleans and then Los Angeles, it's a really dumb move.
Long way around.
Extremely out of the way. But what the hell? So we get there. We've been driving, right, to a Dodge Daytona.
That's hot.
Full of crap. And we get there, and it's like, it's not even Mardi Gras, but still Bourbon Street is just filled with fucking people. And we get there, and she goes in, and she comes back out. She goes, I specifically told them we wanted a room by the pool, and they don't have a room by the pool, and they're fucking putting us in another room with our guy, and we're both all Midwestern indignant and everything. And the guy takes us up to the room, and she hadn't really been listening to the guy. to make up for the non-pool, they put us in what a suite.
Oh, that was
called
nice.
The Paul McCartney suite.
Oh.
Because Paul McCartney had stayed there in the 70s when he had made an album in New Orleans. So now instead of a little room by the pool, and we're all pissy and shitty and everything, and we get in there, it's like got a fucking kitchen. It's got one of those giant balconies on the second floor that overlooking Bourbon Street.
What do you need a kitchen for? Who's going to cook
when
you're
in New Orleans? I know. We didn't need it, but I'm saying it was beautiful and had the balcony.
I see.
That you're like sitting on the balcony. Perfect. Just like you said.
Right.
When you're on the second floor, you're on that, you know, wrought iron railing thing that you see in the movies, and you're looking down, you're like, that looks like fun. I'm not going to go down there and get in there with those people.
Right.
But it's fun to watch them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now, I did shoot a television show in New Orleans, that show Ready for the Weekend. So we were there for 3 days, and it was over St. Patrick's Day. So everything in the streets was green, and, you know, it was all about the green and the signs and the banners and the balloons. But our show wasn't going to be airing until late May. So the producers had to run ahead when we would do our walk and talks and pull all the green stuff down to try to make it not look like St. Patrick's Day. But yeah, it's super fun. It's a young man's game, is it not?
Yeah, and I was never a young man, even as a young man. I was always 40, so I've never been a drinker. So it's like, to me, what I loved about New Orleans was food was fantastic, and the music.
The food is amazing.
The food is amazing.
And Bananas Foster, have you had that?
I did not. I've heard of it.
That's on fire is what it is.
It is on fire, and they also have the, what is the name of that drink? It's like an incredibly expensive drink, not a hurricane. It's called a... Lord.
A Hurricane Katrina. Is this
Hurricane
a Katrina joke?
Yes, it's a Katrina
funny.
Joke. Right. There's a guy. There are houses floating in it.
Hey,
it's a
guys.
It's a fantastic drink.
Here's an idea. If you'd like to support Storyworthy, and heck, why don't you?
Yeah, why don't you? Listen to these stories of debauchery.
Here's a couple of ideas. You can go on over to storyworthypodcast.com and click on our Amazon ad before you shop at Amazon. That always helps
right.
us.
You can buy perhaps a travel guide to Mardi Gras in New Orleans through Amazon.com, and we get a little taste.
Also, folks, we do have a donation button there, and believe it or not, that works for us sometimes, Hannes.
No, absolutely. If you can give us a one-time donation, that's great. If you can give us a monthly donation of like $5 or $10 or whatever you do, it's worth it, right? You're
that's
listening
right.
to this. It's,
good.
It's like public. It's like public TV,
any,
but we're not quite that irritating.
Comments or suggestions or folks you'd like to see on the show, go ahead and email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com. All right, Hannes, we have the one and only John Thomas Griffith here. Do you understand what that means to me?
I don't know. I see a hat and a guitar, but there's an invisible space in between them.
Do you know?
I cannot see John Thomas Griffith.
My three favorite things: hats,
yeah,
guitars,
penises. No.
Ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you are, stay tuned because John Thomas Griffith is on his way here.
All right, listen up, you guys. You've heard about this. Adam Carolla is leading the fight against patent trolls who want to claim podcast technology as their own. They're trying to assert themselves as the owner of the patent of podcasting. It's important for Storyworthy and all the podcasts because if Adam goes down, we all go down. It's domino theory, just like Vietnam. So please visit fundanything.com/patent troll and give anything that you can.
And right now, as an incentive, if you donate $100, you can be on the Storyworthy podcast to tell your own true story. Head on over to fundanything.com/patent troll and we appreciate your support.
Next time on Storyworthy, we have comedian Sheila Ratner.
And I'll be talking about power. What happens when you have it, when you lose it, how to get it back.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
This is Steve Cooper from Cooper Talk, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We have left Cologne, Germany, and we are in Marseille, France, where they, of course, also celebrate Mardi Gras and have spectacular food. And they're being really mean to us. Because we're in France. And I like that. I don't know. There's something
that
about French people being rude.
That is the most ridiculous stereotype, I think.
I know. It is actually true.
I've been in France many times. I mean, I suppose people have been rude to me there. But they've also been rude to me here this morning.
Right.
In the lobby. You know, I mean, it happens all the time. What's the big... I don't understand.
Right. And also, if people are rude to you in a language you don't understand... Then you don't know, so who gives a shit?
Hey, listen.
It's like,
scenery,
believe me, working at a theme park, I've gotten over the rudeness
any
factor.
Any place in France is so beautiful that you quickly get past that anyway.
I know, actually, France, I mean, I would say the same thing about New Orleans. Like, the food is so good
yeah.
that you're like, you know, oh my God, this croque monsieur is fantastic. You want to slap me with it? Okay, you can slap me with it. That's fine. It's still the greatest tasting sandwich I've ever had in my life.
All right, you guys. John Thomas Griffith is here right now. He is a singer, songwriter, best known as a guitarist and vocalist for the band Cowboy Mouth. You know what else he did, Hannes?
What?
He wrote the theme song for Storyworthy, Follow Me.
Follow Me.
Does it sound familiar?
It does sound familiar, but there's a confusing fog that comes over me when I hear the song.
You're often confused. I'll say that.
Huh?
Also, John Thomas scores film and television now, and he moonlights with the band The Californians. You can find him on Facebook, of course, and on Twitter at JTG World. Folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for John Thomas Griffith.
Back in, like, 1998, of course, just to clarify what a crew is... A crew is actually a club, and you pay dues, and you have meetings, and you do charitable work during the year. But we were, and it's spelled with a K, by the way. I see you writing it down over there. It's a K-R-E-W-E, in case anybody wanted to spell out crew the appropriate way, the Mardi Gras way. One of our managers of the band at the time, of Cowboy Mouth, had an inside scoop to this one of the oldest marching crews on Mardi Gras Day called Lions Club. And he wanted to kind of rejuvenate the club with a bunch of younger fellas. And he invited a bunch of musicians like myself, my friend Jeff Beninato, and a bunch of other guys from Dash Rip Rock and other bands of Flesh Tones, all marched in this crew. And the older guys didn't seem to mind. You know, they didn't seem to mind at all. But they didn't really realize what was going on with the younger crew. You know, the debauchery and the drug taking and the yada, yada, yada. Well, this particular day, it was 1998 Mardi Gras Day. And the reason I brought up this story was because this year at Mardi Gras, it rained and was so cold. One of the coldest Mardi Gras on record. And it drove all the crowds away. Basically, these floats are going down the St. Charles Avenue, and there's nobody in the stands, not at all. but in 1998, one of my good friends, Jeff Beninato, and I, was our second year marching with the Lions Club. And what you do, I'm going to kind of describe what happens during the day. First of all, you play a gig the night before. And you don't get off stage till probably 2 in the morning. By the time you get home at 3 in the morning, at 5:30, you got to get up and start dressing up in your get up. So you're already, you know, shit-faced or whatever from the night before. So that's when you start to drop acid, you know, do coke, do whatever you can find, you know, to kind of keep you awake. But when you get to the clubhouse... There's a dozen other musicians that are handing out joints and acid and cocaine and uppers, downers, you name it. And so this is at 6 in the morning. We have to meet at 6 in the morning at this little clubhouse. And I hope you show that picture that I sent. Because this picture, I'm in a blue little boy Fauntleroy outfit. And my white leggings are insulated leggings, you know. And... Basically, they give you a pole, a small like cane, and it's covered with flowers, paper mache flowers that have been dyed. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to hand them out to the ladies as you go down the route, and they give you a kiss. And so if you see some hot chick, you know, you give her a thing, and she's supposed to she's obligated to give you a kiss. So this particular Mardi Gras, which made me think of... from the rain, we started out, of course, everybody's high as a kite, and you can barely walk as it is, and you're handing out flowers, and there's this little truck that's pulling like this beer wagon, and you're going down St. Charles handing out. All of a sudden, it starts to rain. Now, I forgot to mention that I also have a cape on with this blue outfit, a blue cape that already weighs a ton. Now, when it starts to get wet, it weighs 3 tons. And fortunately, we're dragging this thing through the mud and the muck and everything. We were lucky enough that Jeff's sister was along the route and had an apartment so we could dump off the things. But we're tripping the entire time And none of the older guys know what's going on. And we finally get down downtown, and I decide to break off from the band, I guess from the group. And I know I probably looked like a freak to a lot of these guys, so I walked up to these door guys at the big, what is it, Wyndham Hotel, and I asked them to call me a cab, and they just looked at me like I was like retarded or something. And then I realized, oh, yeah, I'm dressed in this little boy Fauntleroy suit. Okay, I get it now. Well, you're soaking wet, and you're trying to walk through the French Quarter and stuff and try to hail a cab, and nobody will pick me up. And finally, this because I'm soaking wet, nobody wants me in their cab because they figured, well, if I pick up somebody else, it's going to be soaking wet back there, and they're going to hate me, whatever. Finally, this guy, he's got a bunch of towels on the back of his thing, on the back of his back seat. And he finally picks me up and takes me home. I get home to find that my door has been busted in and my TV set has been stolen. And I'm in my front living room on Mardi Gras Day. So needless to say, I'm sitting at home with no TV and tripping on acid.
I just have to say, so you think that the guys at the Wyndham were like, oh, he's in a little Lord Fauntleroy suit. No, it's in New Orleans. I don't think they cared about that. You thought you said, excuse me, could you get me a cab? But you were high as a kite, so you were like, why are they looking at me strangely?
Yeah, you have to realize.
Paranoia mode,
yeah. At that point. I bet. Did you have on the shoes, too? Were they like the elf shoes?
The buckle shoes?
No, I had on sneakers.
Oh, oh, that was good.
You do not want to have anything on but sneakers when you're marching. The parade route is very long. It's got to be about, I'd say 6 miles, maybe more.
Miles.
Miles.
So when did you break off? At like mile five?
I broke off at the very end when it reached Canal Street.
And why did you break off?
I'd had enough. I just wanted to go
oh,
home.
Oh, that wasn't, that's where you drew the line?
Yeah.
I wanted to go home.
So in one day, you had all those drugs in you that you mentioned, or how many of those drugs?
I had a full hit of acid.
And acid, was it like a tab? What was it?
Three or four, yeah, it was a tab.
Uh-huh.
Three or four and probably good, nice lines of cocaine. Now, before everybody leaves the clubhouse, which is some old house down in the Irish Bywater or whatever.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And everybody's getting ready to leave. All the guys that were in bands and stuff are all just passing around joints, and you're stoned on top of that. And it's by the time you get to Canal Street, you're ready to go home.
And what time is it? What time are you at Canal
Street? Do you start? Yeah.
You start at 6:30 in the morning. Like I said, at 5:30.
So this is it's almost like a 10K or a marathon or a race. Oh. I mean, why is it so early?
I remember the worst part of it was Jeff, my buddy, had driven his 67 Galaxy 500 to the clubhouse.
Sweet. My brother had one of
those. And picked me up.
Yeah.
And I put my keys in the house, keys and car keys, in his glove box. So when I got home and I saw my door broken in, I realized I don't even have my keys to get in the house.
So it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, right. So what are you complaining about?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Do you remember when the days were that, like, your television set was the most expensive thing in your house?
And the heaviest thing in your house.
And so heavy. Oh, yeah. I mean, to get out of a doorway would have, it just seemed impossible.
No, yeah, we had one of those console TVs where it's, like, encased in wood. It had its own legs.
Right. Oh,
and it was so big, and the TV didn't work anymore, so we had another TV on top of the TV. But
oh,
it was
that's
like
a
its
good look.
Its
that's,
own. Yeah, that was a classy a white really trash look right there with the broken handle that you have the pliers for. It's a ching 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 ching.
Right, right.
But it's like you start. I love how it's like the story sounds like it takes place in 1978, but it's 1998. It's like cocaine and
New Orleans is kind of caught in that time warp. You know?
Yeah,
it
yeah.
Really is,
it
isn't
really
it?
Is. It's an island within it to itself.
So you're telling me that now? I mean, I'm guessing the older guys were all just.
No, they were, I'm talking about.
They were drunk. They weren't drunk.
They were drinking beer.
Why were you in the Lions Club again?
Well, I got into Lions Club, and here's the funny part of it too: is that they had. We were never really in the Lions Club, per se. we didn't do any charitable work. We didn't do anything during the year. It was just when we showed up for Mardi Gras to march, we just paid our $100. Dues for that year, and then we got the march.
Yeah, that's all they cared about.
What about the band playing any of the charitable? Nothing. You didn't do that.
No, all the bands that were in it were kind of brought in by this manager local manager who managed bands and had a little small little record label.
Right. So it was just like a hit it and quit it. You just did the one thing a year.
He wanted people, he wanted to put some younger folks into the Lions Club.
Right.
Because what it boiled down to was a lot of these guys are like in their 70s and 80s and 90s. And you know, it's in jeopardy of disappearing. Basically.
So they need young hipsters to come around
so
just the once a year.
Young hipster
is that
guys
it?
To come in there and sure.
Well, then
up
you
a
expect
bit,
a little
know?
Cocaine and weed. I don't understand what they're all upset about.
Did you have to wear a funny hat in the Lions Club?
I had this red little kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, some kind of red hat that when I just
see,
gotta, you got to post
it.
That picture. That
I will.
See, the problem with those kind of costumes is they make sense only in a certain context. It's like Halloween. That's like late at night on Halloween when you've given up on the Halloween part and you go walk into 7-Eleven and you're dressed as a slutty
over,
nun
yeah.
or something. It's like, this doesn't make any sense here.
Honest, that's okay. A great analogy of how I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. And if you follow Storyworthy on Facebook or if you guys are on Facebook
and
go to Storyworthy, there will be a picture of, there is a picture right now of John Thomas Griffith dressed as Little Lord Fauntleroy or like an employee of the Excalibur Hotel in Vegas.
Yes, yes.
And he is right there on the Facebook page. So
one of the valets because he has the right shoes on to run and get your car.
I mean, you'll
car.
Get a good laugh at just the photo. Itself,
so tell me about the girls. You know, you give them a pole covered in flowers.
No, you get, yeah, you give them a flower,
so
but
you take a flower
what,
off
where, where's the
pole?
Bead?
Oh, you take a flower off the pole. I got so you start talking about poles, and my mind just went out.
No, wait, what happened to the throwing the beads
the
for
beads
boobs
the,
thing? How did that?
We don't. Well, we had beads, and we would throw beads too, but mostly it was the our focus was on the flowers. I mean, the cane was probably a good 3 feet tall. I mean, it was
so
dry.
How many flowers?
I would say probably a couple hundred.
So how many girls did you kiss that day?
Probably a couple hundred. I
this
mean,
sounds like
flowers,
the best
like,
day of the whole world.
Well, you know, it's not really a kiss. It's a like a smack. Like
yeah,
a,
is it possible that none of this ever actually happened and you hallucinated all of it? You were just lying on the...
Girls let you smack them?
I think I was hallucinating the old ladies that I had to kiss.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Is that
hey,
true?
Hey, no. Those old ladies are
but
like, this is
oh,
my...
Let me, but
every
don't you
year.
Only kiss who you give a flower
let
to?
Let me tell you. When I first saw my first Mardi Gras parade and I was 18 years old, I just moved to New Orleans. I was standing on the street on the West Bank watching some West Bank parade. And this balloon landed right by my foot.
A what did?
A doubloon. It's like a little coin. And it's
oh, a doubloon. Doubloon, okay.
Yeah,
right, like a French
is
coin.
It's a coin with the inscription of the crew's little insignia on it. And they're way about not even a quarter of an ounce. They're just so light, and they're not made with anything but plastic or this cheap metal. And this doubloon landed right by my foot, and I went down to pick it up, and this little kid slammed his foot on the doubloon. I was like, well, dude, if you want it that bad.
Right.
I mean, he almost took my fingers off.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, these people are really serious about this little thing.
I guess so.
I didn't realize how serious they were, but you definitely, when you come up with a flower, it's a little bit more special because everybody has beads. Everybody has doubloons.
Is there anything I could give you or you'd give a man and then they'd drop their pants? Does that happen?
No comment. I don't even know what to say to that.
Right. No, I was just wondering. I know I was just wondering because it's always about the women, isn't it? You throw them beads, they lift up their shirt.
Right.
What?
Admittedly, that is easier.
Sure, but I'm just wondering,
there's got to be, look, I've seen enough episodes of Cops, there's got to be some, like, drunk, naked guys wandering Bourbon Street.
I'm not saying I really want to see that. I'm just saying it just seems so chauvinistic. Mardi
Gras. It's completely chauvinistic, yes.
One of the best things I've ever seen is when you go to see the gay men's, they do a drag thing, and they have the most elaborate costumes. Literally, they're these giant, like a guy will walk down the street with like, it looks like a ship.
Yeah.
He's like still walking.
Yes, wow. I've seen
like
footage of
sails
it. Yeah.
Man
and everything.
On a float, right, wow.
And this one guy had the best costume I've ever seen in my life. He was an older fella, and he had like a shower curtain that with a ring
yeah.
at the top
yeah.
right.
that closed, and he'd pull a string, and it would come apart, and all he had on was a loofah.
That is an image.
See, now...
Wow.
Okay, so this is the answer to your question. You got to go to the gay men's parade to see the penises.
Now listen, I want to shift gears for a second. You have taken some time off recently.
Yes, ma'am.
And would you like to tell us about the time you've recently needed to take off?
Well, I had open heart surgery. I caught a bacteria that was very rare. As you know, I'm pretty healthy and fit. And
Now. Well, not in 1998. But
no. Not back then, yeah.
No, look, I've been playing John Thomas in tennis for like the last...
Right, so
how
he's
long
all like...
Doing this? 7 years, 5 years?
5 years, yeah.
Something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you're so strong on the courts, and your serve is so good, and your second serve is so unbelievable, as you know.
Thank you.
And you can beat me hands down, and you're really always good and consistent. You show up, you're there. And then one day you weren't there in December.
Well, you know, in December, Cowboy Mouth went down to Tampa to record an album. I like to think it's some bad sushi I ate, and wound up.
It could be that simple, really.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what the doctors say. It's a bacteria that's an aquatic born bacteria, and misdiagnosis over a month and a half. It wound up vegetating on my aortic valve and my mitral valve, and I wound up having to have open heart surgery to replace them. So now I have a cow tissue valve, and I'm waiting any day now to start going.
Nice. No, you do have a certain milk producing quality that I find very attractive.
All of a sudden, you have a cardiologist in your life.
Yeah, and I've taken pills for the rest of my life, which is a weird thought.
And you have to think about your diet, I suppose.
Yeah, and I also have a pacemaker defibrillator in my left shoulder right here, which is going to affect my toss when I serve.
Wow. So I might have a
I like that that's the most important thing to you.
Yeah.
And my serve is totally screwed by this.
I will tell you something, Hannes. You know, when I was in the ICU at Cedars, one of the things that got me through was thinking about playing tennis again and mountain biking.
Really? That's cool.
And seeing all you guys again.
And guitar.
Yeah. Well, more so that those two things. I mean, I knew I could play guitar again, but those things took a lot more effort.
Yeah.
Than sitting down with a guitar in your lap. And I really, that's what got me. I think
this is,
really.
It's a silly question. Did you have a guitar in your room at Cedars? And
no,
did you
I did not.
Ever strum it in your, okay.
I wish I had.
And
in
so
I like the image of you and you're in the bed and you're just playing something. The nurses are like, "Oh my, oh you're such a
John Thomas." Tell us about being misdiagnosed.
It's tough because you think you have the flu, and the flu is going around, and they promote it so much. I went to another hospital and basically sat there for 6 days, and they really didn't figure out what was going on. They knew it was a bacteria, but they couldn't put their name on it. So they just sent me home with some random antibiotics.
Yeah.
And hoped that they would work. It wasn't until I saw my GP, Mr. Mark Davidson, who I'd be glad to say his name any day of the week, saved my life. He took one look at me on a Monday and told me to check into Cedars that night.
Wow.
It was that immediate. One of the things that the other hospital that did not do was take an ultrasound of my heart, which I think is very important. The minute I got into Cedars, that was the first thing they did. They ultrasounded my heart and saw the vegetation and saw the bacteria had settled on the valves. So I just have high praise for Cedars. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to diss another hospital. But
yeah. No, you... that's, I mean, it's an amazing place.
What are you taking away from this experience? So you've basically had a really difficult 2.5 months.
It was very emotional. I thought about my life. I thought about my friends. I thought about what I'd done, what I'm going to do, what's in the future. I cried a lot, man.
Yeah.
Which is kind of odd because I come from a background where all my uncles and my father were like tough guys, and you never saw them cry. And
it's interesting that you're a musician. I mean, in terms of your sensitivity and that you come from that background. Did your mother have that, or
my mother did have some of that? Yes,
the artistic side.
Where are you from exactly?
I'm born in Lubbock, Texas. I've lived all over the country.
But you were raised in Houston, right?
I was raised in Houston, Southern California, lived in Fullerton from 68 to 74, which, by the way, living here and moving here as a kid in 68 at 8 years old was amazing because you would turn on the radio and it was just the beginning of the rock and roll.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I love the Beatles and all that stuff, but it was just, I remember my father had given me a little realistic transistor radio about the size of your iPhone. Do you remember those, Hannah?
Yeah, I remember. And for you kids out there, Realistic was a brand.
Yeah,
from Radio
Realistic
radio
was a brand name. Yeah, and it was, yeah. And it was like a radio that is bigger than your cell phone is now. But to us, it was the smallest radio in the world. It was amazing.
Yeah. And now they're probably considered vintage.
Sure.
And they'd probably pay three times as much as they were.
Oh, yeah. No, if you still had it, you'd be able to, yeah.
So he gave you that.
Well, he gave me my first little Realistic Radio Shack radio. And the first time I turned it on, I heard, you know, just like... You know,
yeah.
And I was just like floored. I was like, "What the fuck is that?"
Wow.
Yeah. Now, kids, you also have to remember that you used to have to listen to what they played. You couldn't choose every single song. It was like you just turn on the radio and it would play. It's not like you're, I'm gonna have my genius thing and I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna make a playlist. It's like,
right.
You know.
Okay.
And
so
you
then what happened?
That was the golden days of radio.
Yeah.
You just took what you got.
Yeah. And you'd like wait, you'd have a tape recorder and you'd wait for the song to come back so you could tape that song.
I would do the exact same thing, Hans.
Yeah. And then you'd always miss the first 10 seconds of it.
Well, the guy would talk over the first 10 seconds, too, you know, the DJ.
Yeah.
I was hitting the post, like they used to say in radio.
Right,
talk right up until
weather,
he started
the traffic
singing.
And the weather.
Wow,
and
that brings back a lot of memories.
Okay, so from this entire heart experience that you've just gone through, have any songs come out of this?
I have just started writing again. I haven't really played. The funny thing is, I guess I could look at it like this. I had a really tough 2005, and I really haven't mourned the death of my parents or my divorce at the same time. So I lost, in 2005, I lost three people that I really dearly loved, and I really hadn't really snapped back from it. And I like to kind of think of this. I told my therapist, I said, well, let's think of it like, you know, I have a broken heart and we're going to get it fixed and we're all going to come back and it's going to be all good. And so that's the way I kind of look
at it. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're coming full circle, even though it's 10 years later. It doesn't matter the time that passes, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's really like that your heart heals and you can move forward.
You definitely reflect a lot in the ICU. You find God pretty quick. Let me put it to you that way. I'm not a very religious guy. I'm very spiritual in that respect. My family brought me up as a Southern Baptist. So it's funny when you were talking about the Ash Wednesday and the Lent being like a kind of a that is a very Catholic thing. Because you know, as a Southern Baptist, and you're marching in the Lions Club dropping acid.
I don't remember reading that in my missal, in my Catholic missal.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wow, what's wrong with this picture?
So you're saying the Catholics are the Germans of Mardi Gras.
Right.
They're like not having nearly as much fun as everybody else.
Hey, listen.
We never practiced Lent, you know, and stuff in Baptist.
Oh, is
religion.
That right? That's a
you
Catholic
never did.
Thing.
Yeah. You kind of, you didn't really. You didn't like decide what you're going to do. Basically, you had a New Year's resolution and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So listen, when are folks going to see you back out there with Cowboy Mouth?
April 11th, I join the band again in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Oh, terrific.
And Austin, Texas the next night.
And are you going to continue traveling as much as you have the last few years?
No. We've kind of gone down to like about 5 gigs a month.
Uh-huh.
Fred LeBlanc, our
drummer,
fetus leader and drummer, has a baby on the way and already has one, a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so I know he has to spend a lot of time.
Let me ask you something. But you formed the band, didn't you, in 1990?
I did not. The true story is Fred formed the band. He had a deal with EMI. He lost the deal with EMI. His manager at the time suggested that he just form a band. He was in a band called Dash Rip Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty well known throughout the Southeast Conference. And she suggested go back to those venues that you had been in with Dash Rip Rock because you'd probably get a gig real easy. Form a band, go out, and just start playing again. They had formed a 3-piece with Paul Sanchez and this other guy named Paul Clement. And they admittedly said it's not working. And I had been playing with Paul Sanchez as a band called the Lonesome Travelers. It was just 2-piece, 2 guys singing, Everly Brothers type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, let's call John Griffith, see if he's doing anything. So I went in and I played. And
who came up with the name Cowboy Mouth?
Paul did.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
It's a Sam Shepard play.
So, right. It's the you want to be...
bigger.
How's
you
it
wanna,
go?
You want to take in the little bits and parts of pieces of people's lives and spit them out larger than life. You need to be a rock and roll Jesus with a cowboy mouth.
There it is. There it is. So your choice is either cowboy mouth or rock and roll Jesus, and right. I think that's
I
taken.
Think rock and roll Jesus.
If you're going to go with another Sam Shepard, Buried Child is too depressing a well, title for...
We've actually had theater students come to us in the early days and want to do the play because there's only two people in the play. Well, three. There's the Lobster Man.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, the play was written while he was dating Patti Smith, and they were heroin junkies. More drugs. Jesus.
More drugs.
Yeah. So do you think drugs are way in your past, John Thomas?
Pardon?
Drugs. Are they way in your past now?
They're so way in my past.
That's great.
I feel like this experience is also, I mean, that's all I'll say.
I don't mean to say has it been a wake-up call, but has it been a wake-up call?
No, go ahead. No. Just like some things are cliches for a reason because they're true. And like, yeah, that's a cliche, but it's absolutely the truth.
I agree with
these are wake-up calls.
It's a wake-up call on a lot of different levels. I find myself now much more active than I was before it happened. I felt really lethargic and weighed down. I didn't finish projects. I'd go halfway through them and leave them, and I wouldn't come back to them. And now I follow through. I don't feel weighted down.
Well, you know, like as you know, my father just passed away.
Yes.
And it does, when you see death so closely, it does make you realize that, as we all know, this is it, man. There is no other life going to happen. This is the opportunity. What are you going
to
do?
Well, like I like to say is, you know, I didn't see the white light or anything like that, so I don't think I got my money's worth.
Listen, you had me on the edge of my freaking seat. I don't want to ever, I don't want to go through that again.
I think,
again,
by the way,
friend.
the name of the first song you should write is Never Go to Florida. Because that's a motto
Who
I have.
Who calls that God's waiting room? Who calls it that?
Everybody.
I will say this. There's that old adage that you don't eat sushi in a landlocked state.
Oh, interesting.
I know, but that you know,
I'm a big sushi fan, of course, but we're in California, right?
Right.
Yeah, but I've seen like sushi places like on the way to Palm Springs, and I'm like, no. It's 105 degrees outside.
Right.
I'm not eating. You want some?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. And I'd like to thank a couple of people here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and, of course, Sean Merrick. And, of course, our storyteller tonight. Thank you so much, John Thomas Griffith.
Ooh. Thanks for having me.
I am so happy you are back. By the way, are you going to be playing tennis again?
Probably next week I'm going to start hitting again.
Well,
it's been 6 weeks. I just got my stitches out yesterday, and I'm looking forward. I'm going to hit against the wall by my house. There's a wall, a tennis court. So
I'll be your wall.
Okay.
No, listen, this could be my advantage. This is kind of what I've been waiting for in a way.
Oh, yeah. While he's down.
Now, the truth is, she was all like, it's so sad. I think I can finally beat his ass. And she laughed
evilly.
All
right, you guys. And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, who wrote our theme song, Follow Me.
Which you will hear momentarily.
That's right. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Hey, little brother, are you ready to go? Hey, little sister, can you take it real slow? All of you sinners who wanna believe, yeah. Hey, 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 get back on the road now, baby. I know you wanna be free, and you can. Follow me, yeah, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, yeah, follow me. I'll keep you safe. I'm going to heaven in a blue Cadillac, with the stereo pumping, Hannes in the back. like a Christina along the way, yeah. Hey, 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 put on your makeup, baby. Get out of the cold. Woo! And follow me, I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, yeah, follow me, I'll keep you satisfied. Follow me, yeah, follow me. You're looking for heaven, baby, the line forms to the rear, and you can follow me, I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, I'll keep you satisfied. Follow me, I'll take you down to the river. Keep you satisfied.
Woo!
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny and I love you.